You're listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. Hey friends, Dan Duvall here to tell you about something I am super excited about. The Bride Tribe Advance 2023, which we are going to be calling Revolution. Take your place in the kingdom. This is going to happen at the Royal Sonesta in Houston in the Galleria area from November 9th through the 12th. At booking.bridemovement.com, you will be able to register for this event. And it links right from bridemovement.com. I know I don't always give announcements on this podcast for what's going on in the bride ministries world, but this is just too important, friends. It is going to be extraordinary. Every year that we do this advance, it is a move of God. It is a move of God. Last year, we had 3 hours of nonstop testimony after the event with a line that was still going, and we just had to shut it down so we could tear down. It was because God moves at these advances, and we don't want those of you that are part of our podcast family to miss out because you just didn't get the news. Booking.bridemovement.com. You can sign up. You will be able to get your hotel room. You'll also be able to get some information about the event itself, meet our speakers. It's going to be me, Todd Edwards, and also two of my favorite people from the other side of the world, Todd and Rachel Weatherly. And we are going to be having an extraordinary time of family and fellowship, worship, and cutting edge revelation. So I want to invite you all, booking.bridemovement.com. Now, in addition to that, keep in mind, danduvall.com is the home of the Discovering Truth podcast. You can do a couple of things on that website. Number one, you can access our podcasts. Number two, you can purchase really cool merchandise like mugs and shirts. And we have the whole Names of God series. A lot of people that watch church, they say, hey, where'd you get that really cool shirt with all the names of God? Jehovah Jireh, Jehovah Rapha, Jehovah Gabor. Like, where is that sold? danduvall.com, friends. And it comes in robes for the ladies and handbags and all that cool stuff. And you can know that you are supporting this podcast when you buy and look highly fashionable in your new gear. We also have the ability to become a podcast patron for as little as $5 a month. And that comes with benefits. You get early access to these podcasts and a few other goodies. And so the last piece of news, as many of you know, Overcomer Accelerated is our offering to those that want to accelerate their healing journey. You can join in three ways. One, you can join just for the live components, which includes a live ministry demonstration with yours truly on a weekly basis, as well as book study. Option number two includes over 100 hours of coursework online in addition to the live component. And the third way to join is with a coach. So you'll get the live ministry and the book study. You'll get over 100 hours of learning online, and you will also get 8 hours of personalized one-on-one coaching with a trained coach every month that you stay enrolled. And so overcomeraccelerated.com, check out the offer. And with that said, we're going to jump right into the podcast on the other side. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. Those were your announcements. Welcome, friends, to another episode of Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. I am back in the this is the new statement for this location. It is the tech lab of Alex Valero. And if it looks like we're wearing the same outfits from our last interview, it's because we are recording this back to back. Yes, I know. The cliffhanger was irrational and unreasonable. But that's just what you get here on Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. Why you keep coming back, friends. You guys, yes, you keep coming back because you want to know. And you should. And I'm here to help you want to know more
Sherry, you introduced us to a background that is profound in a number of ways. Number one, the number of testimonies of what the Lord has done in your life.
Yeah.
You have a background of satanic ritual abuse, of government projects. You have overcome so much to be here.
Yeah.
And in that, in order to overcome, you need a problem. And the level of conflict around your life, opposition, mistreatment, abuse is extraordinary. And in that, you know, I applaud you as a hero.
Mm, thanks. I don't feel like a hero, but thank you.
And in our last conversation, it's just a bit of a review for those of you. And if you haven't heard the first part of Sherry's interview, you can just go back in our channel, dandeval.com, so on and so forth. By the way, this is a trigger warning because this program, like the last one, will be a little heavy.
Right.
Because that's the nature of your story.
Right.
But in our first episode, we learned that you were born in Japan. Your father was in the military. You came to the United States. You were first in Las Vegas area, near Area 51. You later moved to Massachusetts, where you were abused all along the way. But definitely in Las Vegas, you were receiving Russian programming and a preschool environment. You were learning about weapons and other things, so the Russian language in Massachusetts. You were exposed to the military, the Air Force base there, as well as a club called the Oddfellows Club, where there were satanic rituals happening and human trafficking for those in the projects at a Catholic institution. And we left off where you were about to open up on the meaning of the satanic rituals with the group at the Odd Fellows Club,
right,
in Massachusetts. And you had mentioned you had at one time a dog,
right,
named Buttons.
Yeah. Yeah. She was a beagle. She was so cute. And, I always wanted a dog always my life. And, so my father got my sister and I this puppy, and we were never taught, like, how to take care of it. Like, you know, this is what you do, and this is you take it for a walk. We weren't taught. So it was like he set us up to fail. So I loved this dog more than anything. And one day came home from school, and she was gone. There was no warning, no nothing. And so he came home, and he... My father is a sadist, okay? And so here my sister and I, like, where is the dog, you know? And he said, well, you guys weren't taking good care of her, so I brought her to the pound, and she went on top of a kennel, you know, a dog kennel thing, and was watching me as I drove away.
Wow.
He's telling us this. And I was completely devastated, brokenhearted, and felt guilty because it's not that we didn't take care of the dog. Of course, she was fed and watered and picked up her poop and everything. But in his mind, and that's how these people do these things too, it's like you're set up to fail.
Yeah.
So in his rationale, we didn't take good care of the dog, but in real reality, she was taken very well care of, and we loved her.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took great pleasure in saying how the dog was so sad watching him drive away. And I'm telling you that all this because in the previous thing with Dan, we were talking about how men would come in the middle of the night and take me away. Well, one of those times, I was probably 12, maybe, mm-hmm. 11 and a half,
mm-hmm.
12, and the dog had been gone. And I come to at this big bonfire, and it's dark, and it's freezing cold outside. And there are people in these black robes with hoods, and you couldn't see their faces, and the ones you could see their faces, they had like demonic masks on. And it was terrifying because, like, I had been drugged, and then I'm here I am, and I'm shivering, and all of a sudden, they bring out my dog. And they said to me, they gave me a knife.
Oh, no.
And they said, if you don't want us to do things to your sister, you need to kill your dog. Well, the thing was, right, so when my dog saw me, I mean, the first part of this whole thing was it was like I was overjoyed. You know, here I'm put in this situation with cold, drugged, disoriented, frightening people. I'm a kid, you know, in this bonfire. Everything else is pitch black. And, you know, there's torches in the ground and everything. But first thing is my dog, and I see her, and she's overjoyed to see me, and she's licking my face and knocked me on the ground, and I was hugging her, and then they're like, Cherie, take this knife and kill her. And I'm like, why? Like, what? I don't understand. And they're like, if you don't kill her, number one, we are going to get your sister. And we're going to do the things that we've done to you. But if you don't kill your dog, we're going to skin her alive. And I didn't know what that meant. You know, and so I'm like, no, I can't kill her. And I'm like bawling. And they started at her feet and in front of me. They literally skinned her alive as I am screaming and begging and crying. And the dog was screaming. I will never forget that sound. And I love that dog. Like, I never felt close to people, but I love my dog. And she had been taken away, and then I found her, and the blood and the screaming, and to this day, I've never had a female dog. I've had male dogs. And I never had one with floppy ears again either. Because beagles have floppy ears. And so I didn't have a dog that had floppy ears either. It was males. That was the beginning of a long years of them taking me to this place, and there were other places too, but in them it was bunnies and kittens and puppies, and like it. I don't know that, like, you ever really recover from that. Like, And then I remembered children, that they would do it to children.
Wow.
And like, and you can't save them. And then I remember a couple of times, like, all of the animals, they scream. They all scream. And I remember taking the knife and, like, slitting their throat before they could do it. So they... So then, by your hand, you're killing them. You know? So it's either let them scream and scream and scream, or you do it quick. So that those people would do it, and that, but they make you do it, and then you hate yourself because you killed something precious. And to this day, if I hear a kid scream or cry or an animal like her scream or yelp, like, I go running to see what I can do. And another thing that happened at that place where they have the fire, there was a man one time, I don't know who he was, I think he was in the mafia, and they brought him, and it was another cold night, and I was really young, and he had done some stuff to piss off the wrong people, apparently. So what they did was, in front of me, I'm kneeling on the ground and, like, no coat or anything, and it's freezing, and they took a knife and disemboweled him from, like, here down, and he was a really big guy, and as he watched in horror as his guts fell out, and he was holding them, and like, they were just, like, steaming, you know, in the cold air, and he was, like, trying to hold them and push them back in, and by this time, so many things like this had happened, like, you watch in, like, shock. Like, I had never seen this yet. I had never seen them do this. And so then, they scalped him while he was still alive. And then they plucked out his eyeballs as he's holding his entrails, his intestines, and like that, you know, he had that soundless scream, you know, and then he fell over, and then all his guts were on the ground, and then they took me and they put me inside his body, and it was steaming and warm, and
yeah.
And then another time I came to, like, and I didn't know where I was. But the smell, like, was the most disgusting smell I had ever smelled in my life. And I am, look, and there's like a severed head next to me and severed body parts, all in different states of decomposition, and the smell. But like, there were little kids in there and people, and there was maggots, and so I finally, it come to find out it was a pit, and they had cut up people in there, and so I finally clawed my way out. But like, I'll never forget the faces looking at me, and the little hands, you know, the little kids and the little feet, and and I remember there was this little blonde girl, just her head, and was like all blood, and just put like half of her head, her face, like, was all bloody and bashed in, and you know, they cut her head off, and but the rest of her face, and she was looking at me like she was dead, but she was looking at me, and I'll never forget, she looked like an angel, like a little angel. And so I finally get out of this pit, and I could hear somebody going, "Help me, help me." And there was somebody further down than me, and I'm like moving body parts, trying to like get to them. It was a girl, another girl, and I couldn't get to her. And then it like faded away, and she had been screaming and screaming and "Help me, help me," and I couldn't get all the body parts out of the way to get to her. And I feel like I've never forgave myself, like, to, I couldn't help her. Like, and just this faint, like, help me, and screaming, and just...
Oh my gosh.
The things they do to people are not human. Like, human, who does these things? And, yeah. So, if there's ever anything I can do to get them and to expose them, and I'll do whatever it takes. You know, they tried so many times to kill me. They have done things to me, and God has preserved my life. You know, when things get really bad, I look at my fingers and toes, and I'm like, I'm still alive. I'm still alive. I still have all my fingers and toes, and they didn't kill me. They didn't get to kill me because God has preserved my life. So the rest of my life, I will do whatever it takes to help other people, but also to expose these people. And even if one person is saved, you know, but
you know, as you're sharing about what they did at this awful place, right? Yes, if this is the first time a person has heard a testimony like yours, it's going to turn them inside out, as it should. This kind of stuff is happening to little children. Everywhere. In fact, there are people that get away with this every day. And some of them get to go put on a suit and make a lot of money. Some of them get to sit in a box and judge. Whether or not your uncle's going to jail for the next 10 to 15 years because of a possession charge. And then they get out and they are doing these kinds of things. I do have a question about the Goodfellows Club. Now, you were young as all of these things were happening. Did you have any perspective at the time as to the identity, employment, role that the people that were there, the men that were there, had in the community?
At the time, I didn't. But I remember they were very wealthy. I remember that gold rings, diamonds, really expensive watches. And it wasn't till I was a bit older and saw some of these people's faces in the newspaper and police, you know, police, people that, you know, I was taught really young that you're supposed to trust. Was there anybody specific that you remembered that...
You've never given me names, interestingly enough. And so, no, but... taking it in a slightly different direction at this point, I'm going to ask you a question. You meet a guy, Joe Schmo, and he says, listen, there's no such thing as satanic ritual abuse. That's just make-believe. People don't really do that. This is not real in the world that we live in. If it was, there would be police reports about these kinds of crimes. No one's reporting on this stuff. I don't believe this could be true. One, how does that make you feel? And two, how would you like to respond?
Well, my first thought is I don't blame people for not believing it because it's so messed up. It could seem to be far-fetched because what kind of sick person, which I'm having a really hard time, like, not swearing, so I'm just letting you know good.
No, you're doing a great job.
Thank you. I'm really trying because there is, those people... you know what, God is going to judge them, so vengeance is his, and how would I respond to a person? I would tell them stories that happened, and there's actually a place, that is known by the community in Florida, I won't say where, that people who live in that particular town know that on Halloween, Halloween, like the week or week and a half up to Halloween, and other different holidays, they keep their children indoors. They don't let them out of their sight. And there's a park in that town where these apparently satanic rituals happen with kidnapped children. And the police know not to go near there, okay? Whether by their understanding and knowing what is going on, and they agree with it, or they're terrified of the people and who perpetrate these crimes. And so they do these satanic rituals. They also do, is it called adrenochrome,
mm-hmm.
where they terrify the children,
mm-hmm.
horrify them,
mm-hmm.
and torture them,
mm-hmm.
to get it, and then they get that substance. And but then after what happens is they burn the place to the ground, so there's no DNA evidence, so the children are just missing. And and the people in the community know this is happening, but people are terrified because these are powerful people who are in the government, in politics, in their communities themselves, you know, police officers and other people. And so everybody's afraid to stand up, because who knows if they're going to show up at your house that night, or who they're going to send to your house, and what they'll do to your family. So people just shut up and try to keep their kids within sight. So
all of this was happening. You were still just in elementary and middle school.
Right.
As we move along in your story, there's a certain point where you meet somebody. And this person, you did give me their name.
Yes.
And so I'm going to just say it.
Right.
Because his name was Hans.
Yes.
And he was a Nazi?
Yes. A German scientist.
And not exactly the nicest person you'd meet.
No.
How old were you in your first memories of this guy?
Well, my first memory of him, actually, well, remembrance of him,
mm-hmm.
that I, which was odd because I didn't remember him at all, what the things he did, but was I was actually, wasn't that long ago, probably about 10, 12 years ago, we were visiting family in Massachusetts, and it was the holidays, and this was so strange. And I was going past that place at the Air Force Base, their land, the mm-hmm. woods, and I was remembering things. And it was really weird because I was like remembering, it was like 6 o'clock in the morning, we were headed back home, and I turned to my husband to say, hey, I remember, and I started talking, and then what was so strange is I saw this face, like came into, like, I saw this face, and he goes, sleep. And I was in the middle of talking to my husband, starting to tell him, like, hey, I just remembered this, and I saw the face and then sleep. And then apparently I was out cold for a couple hours, and my husband, I was like, I woke up and I was like, what happened? He goes, it was so weird. He goes, that was so weird. He goes, you were talking, and then all of a sudden you went like this. He said, and you were out. He's like, I pushed you. I was like, wake up. Are you okay? He said, because it was the oddest thing. You were in the middle of a sentence. And so then from that, in this face I remembered, then all of a sudden these memories come flooding back. And so this man, his name is Hans, and he very handsome and like a very cold way, like no emotion ever on his face, except a couple times I saw him like laugh like a sick person. And, but he had like round wire rim glasses, ice blue eyes, very strong jaw with a cleft chin and short blonde hair. And so when my memory started about him, I remembered being on a like a operating table type thing, except it wasn't like a normal operating table because the back came up and it had a rod that would hold your head, you know, and it came around like this apparatus, and like you're always undressed on this table, cold table, and then implanting things, which I know now are like trackers and different things, and he did experiment in a lot of my torture like came from him, and he would well, first of all, they starve you. I always, one of the things that before I knew any of, remembered any of this stuff that happened in my life, like, I, things were not ever good if I was cold, hungry, and in pain, and hadn't slept. Like, those were like, that was the bad thing in my life. And now I know it's because what they do is they sleep deprive you. I remember being like on a rack and like they try to shame you, you know, they keep you barely dressed or not dressed at all. And you're like tied to things. They throw freezing cold water on you. They electrocute you. They cut you. They do things to you. I won't describe because it'll be too triggering and too graphic. And then they also put you in like a dog crate. And I apologize if this it triggers anybody, but they put me in a dog crate and like you're, it's tiny, so you're like your knees are like almost up to you, and you're like in this dog crate and you're naked, and so as a girl you have your period. But what they would do is they would put rats in the cage, and so the blood and then the rats, and then they try to, they're biting you there. And so then you learn to protect yourself, and then you're like snapping necks and pulling their heads off and like biting their heads off. And, yeah, basically they make you be like an animal. And, so, and then, you know, with the loud music, I remember, and the drugs. You know, they drug you, and just the amount of drugs and hallucinating and the music. And I remember when I first started my journey of healing, God was like, don't listen to any music except worship music and, like, Christmas music. And I didn't understand why, but then I, like, would be watching a movie or something, and they would have, you know, it would be like the 80s rock, you know, the heavy metal, you know, AC/DC, Judas Priest, all those, you know, things. And they, because they would program you with that music. And they would put these images and flash stuff, and you would get downloads of specs of planes. Like, and one time I was sitting on a plane and I was looking it over. We hadn't gone yet. We were, everybody was boarding. I was sitting in the window and I was looking at the plane next to where we were. And I was like, huh, I had memories of going and being able to get on the plane and put a bomb on the plane, and like how to do that. And but like that's kind of like what they do. So they teach you, they flash all the things as they're playing this music. You're on hallucinogenic drugs and you're starving to death and you're in pain. And so this man Hans, so there's going to be a really special place in hell for this man. So they had a place, and it seemed like an auditorium or a movie theater, but it was more like an auditorium where there's a stage, right? And this will be a trigger alert too. So there was only like me and a couple other people. It was really dark in there, but the stage was lit bright. And they have people behind you so that they usually men, big men, and they're like, you need to watch this. If you close your eyes, we're going to cut your eyelids off. And you need to watch. And so the first one I remembered was that guy, the man Hans, is in a white lab coat, and he wheels in a man, and he's in a chair, and he is strapped down, you know, on the arms, strapped down, his legs were strapped down, and he's up against, you know, this chair that has the thing like that's on the table where he would do stuff to my head. But this man had this thing around his head so he couldn't move. And then he injected him with something so the man couldn't struggle because he was struggling. So it was like like something to paralyze him. Like, he was paralyzed. And then he wheeled in this woman. Hmm. And so they are facing each other, chair to chair, like not even 3-4 feet apart. And they're looking at each other. And so he's already paralyzed. And he, like, was freaking out. Like, and then he's paralyzed. And then she comes in, she's restrained, you know, wrists on the thing, her leg, her ankles, and also her head is in this thing with the metal right here. And so she sees this man who now is an adult. I know it was probably her husband or somebody she loved dearly. And so they're like looking at each other. So he injects her, paralyzes her. Then, he takes this, saw and, he cuts the top of the man's head off. And then he does the same thing to the woman, cuts the top of her head off. And so, like, you are literally seeing, like, their brains. Like, there's the metal band and then brains. And he injected something so it would, like, stop the bleeding from, you know, profusely. Like, it wasn't as, at first it was bloody and then it wasn't as bloody. And then the person is behind me. Because I'm like, start sobbing, and he grabbed my hair, and he's like, you need to watch. Wow. And there was like a person over here and a person over here in the audience, so that I think there was only 3 of us I saw, but they also had a person behind them. And then, Then Hans takes a razor blade. 'Cause, like, for some reason they were able to, like, They were trying to close their eyes, you know, because they're watching what is happening to the other one. And so Hans takes out a scalpel and he literally cut their eyelids off. So they had to watch each other. And then he... He cut, and just so you know, this took a long time. This was not like a short thing. This was like a long thing.
Wow.
And, so by then, like, some of the medication must have been wearing off or something. I don't understand, like, physical stuff, but he was like so sick. He had like this sharp thing, and then he would poke an area of the brain, and like the guy's arm would move, like, and he was just is laughing.
Oh my.
Like he's poking. So then he and like just tears like coming. And so then he cut a piece of the woman's brain and put it like on this skewer, I guess you could call it, a metal skewer, and went over to the husband and opened his mouth and made him eat it. And then he did the same thing. And and there was, it was a girl that I think she was over here in front of me to, and I never saw her, but she like was sobbing. And they, like, dragged her out, and then I heard her screaming. And, like, I remember I knew better. Like, you don't cry. You, like, I remember having tears roll down my face, and, like, but you don't, because then they torture you if you have any emotion, any outburst, anything. And
did these two people end up dead at the end of this?
Yes, he killed them.
Would you classify Hans as an Illuminati scientist, a government scientist, a Nazi scientist? And where would you categorize this character? Who was he working with and for?
He was definitely working for the... he was German scientist, but he was working for the U.S. government.
Oh.
And I... I don't know what else, but he was working for the U.S. government.
My gosh.
Too.
Which means that somebody's tax dollars funded this guy's lifestyle.
Yep.
So he could do this to people and they could make you watch.
Yep. And then they have those fail safes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so if you remember things or you go to tell, and then like he had that thing, like sleep, like that was, I was remembering and was like, hey, And then, like, so, but to even get past the fail safes, if that's what they call them, right?
Sure.
Fail safe. You go through, like, excruciating pain.
Yep.
Like, you get, like, I would feel like my head was going to explode.
Mm.
And, like, I would, it, like, the pain would be so bad, like it literally was like a capsule or something.
Yep.
Is that went off and like I wouldn't be able to see, like it would be like the most excruciating pain, and it would happen in different parts of my body, but like because they don't want you to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want you to know who they are. They don't want you to remember what they did and what you're made for, created to do, and what they train you to do or what their agenda. They don't want you to remember it. So it's like your life is compartmentalized. Like I had this life over here, but this whole other life over here, and they never met. Like, you didn't remember until you start remembering.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the hardest, I think, for a survivor, first of all, is to believe all this. Because I know I was like, how can this be true? But I know beyond a shadow of a doubt it's all true.
Right.
Because the thing is like if it's, say, an implanted memory,
mm-hmm.
you don't have the emotion to go with it, right?
Good point.
So when you are remembering things that have happened, or the emotion is like because you don't really experience it at the time,
mm-hmm.
you don't feel those feelings, and then now you're remembering them and you feel everything, the horror, the sadness, the pain, and like you even have body pains, like where they hurt you, like you remember. And then so what's hard for a survivor is remembering things, pushing past the pain.
Yeah.
Pushing past the unbelief and seeking God, and then getting the right help, because I prayed like for a long time, because I had been to ministries and they were able to do so much, but nobody knew at all what to do with this.
Yes.
And to be honest, I wasn't believed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I know this is real. I don't want it to be real. Like, I can't make this stuff up. Like, you can't make this stuff up. And the depression that can hit, you know, and the just even because of the fail safes, pushing through the pain and the headaches and the things going off in your body, like in sometimes, like there have been times like I've been immobilized, literally immobilized, not being able to move, and so I just want to encourage anybody, like if you are going through these things, seek help with this ministry. God brought Dan in his ministry when I was desperate and I needed help, and I was so grateful for Dan. Thank you. I want to really honestly say thank you, first of all, for believing in me. Thank you for believing me when I told you these things, because a big part of it is shame too, because you're like, am I just crazy? Is this really real? Is this, you know? And then you having the knowledge and skill and kindness and compassion. Thank you for that so much, for your kindness towards me and all my parts, and that you were kind and very skilled, and God showed up. And so I just encourage anybody to, it's worth it to get healed. It's worth the process. It's worth it because there is life, like real, not just surviving, not just barely making it, not just suffering. There is actual life and joy and peace in the journey, and God has been with me through it all and has given me the courage to face these terrible things, what has been done to me, but also things they made me do, and to forgive myself. And
you know, as you're talking, there's so many pieces here that deserve to be highlighted. Number one, you know, these evil people are notorious for saying things like, "You can't outthink this." One of the real strategies of the enemy and those that work for him is to get people to a place where they cannot trust themselves. They
right.
cannot trust others.
Right.
And to believe they cannot trust God.
Right.
Because others representing God are failures. So
right.
therefore God is clearly failing. So trust the program.
Right.
The problem that the kingdom of darkness is going to run into is that they cannot outsmart Jesus.
Right.
You know, for a person that's going on a healing journey like yours, which you describe as exactly what it is, there are, and you use the term fail safes, which is really good, and the experience is bombs, literally bombs placed in the mind
right.
and the subconscious to explode on trigger. So
right.
it's like it's set, and if there is a certain line that is crossed, a certain line of knowledge, a certain line of acceptance, a certain line of progress even,
right.
the bomb is going to explode in the subconscious and create a disaster.
Yeah.
A desire to suicide, a
yes.
desire to self-harm,
yes.
inability to sleep, total insomnia,
yes.
other physiological parts of the body just shutting down,
yes.
to drive a hospitalization or a surrender to a specific mental institution where the person
yes.
will know this is where I must go and report, even though that is not the conscious mind process.
Right.
We also use a term, tripwire,
right.
which is another way of describing a similar thing in the mind. It's like a tripwire is, you know, you set up a wire in a house. And so if a burglar or someone that's not supposed to be there is not watching out and they step on it, it triggers an alarm. An
right.
alarm goes off or some kind of defensive protocol goes off.
Right.
And so the tripwires that exist in the subconscious trigger all kinds of things. And as a person says, I'm going to press through, it's almost like they have to be the burglar breaking into their own mind.
Yes.
Where everything has been hidden and reinforced.
Yes.
And for the typical survivor that begins to get memories, you get pieces, but not the whole thing. And to get the whole thing, you have to press through bombs and tripwires where
yes.
all kinds of consequences now
yes.
are overtaking that individual. Now it's like, I want to kill
yes.
myself. I can't sleep.
Yes.
I can't eat. I want to self-harm. I want to
yes.
do this. And when they try to explain that situation to people,
right.
they are not believed. And
right.
the what I call false reality overlay, which is the version of the world we live in that we're told to believe
mm-hmm.
exists,
right.
is in place. Social dynamics, literally, social pressure, peer
yes.
pressure,
yes.
expectations from people in the community become one of the best and most effective reinforcements of programming
yes.
because a person is completely demoralized.
Yes.
By being unbelieved or ridiculed.
Yes.
And so with all of that against a person, to keep choosing to press in and go for their healing anyway, that makes a hero. Which takes me back to my opening statement, Shuri, because we are here. Because you didn't quit.
Right.
It doesn't matter how much skill someone like me has been given by the Lord to help. It's also that choice each individual has to make. It's because the consequences are real.
They are real. Like, I remember one time I was sitting in my car and I heard this voice. Well, first of all, I would get a sound in my ear, like this high-pitched noise. It was usually this ear. So this high-pitched noise happened, and then I don't know if it was like a real voice, but it was like I heard a voice, and it said, go into the woods, because I live in Florida, go in the woods and let the snakes bite you. And, like, I open my car door, like, because it's, you do it. Like, so I open my car door, and I heard Cherie, and it was the Lord. Like, and I, like, snapped out of whatever programming it was, because they knew that I was seeking hard after God, that I wasn't going to give up. And so they get you to do things. Another time, a phone started having this tone in a white circle that was going like woo woo in like series of tones. I was holding the phone, and before I realized what was happening, I heard Cherie really loud, which I know was an angel or the Lord, right? And I was almost at the road, and I knew that the intent was for me to go into the road to get hit by a truck. And but the Lord, every time, has, like, Cherie, and I hear it, and I, like, it snaps you out of, like, the programming or the triggers they do to make you go kill yourself, make you, and he has, I can honestly say that I have not sought my healing for myself. It is the encounters that I have had with the Lord that are more real than the horror, the programming, the torture, the everything. That is more real, more beautiful, more... It's love. And I never had love. And but certainly didn't love myself, and I hated everybody else. And this man, God, Jesus, who came and, like, literally pulled me out of the pit and has loved me, has blessed me, who has... Like, he speaks to me. Like, I don't hear their voices anymore. I don't hear the demonic anymore. I hear him, and he speaks to me, and his love and acceptance for me, even at the beginning, where I didn't even know all that has come out, all the memories, and that he already knew it and has loved me, encouraged me. He's put people in my life who have been real friends to me and who believe in me and believe in what God is doing in me. And so it's like, I want now, I have had this taste of freedom, and I want to live. Like this burning God that I know God has put in me to live and experience His goodness in life abundantly, and just having a taste of His freedom, have a that love that is so, like, I can describe these horrors easier than I can describe who He is, who God is, and but He's the love of my life. He is everything to me. He is. He's been everything to me, and He has loved me, and I've come to find out quite weirdly, He actually even likes me.
Wow.
I'm like, that's craziness in itself, like this, that He likes me. And so I want to honor Him, and I want to live, and I want to help other people. And I, if anything I can do to encourage anybody, just like keep going and don't let the enemy win. And don't let them win. And yeah.
One of the things that I have been very convinced of in my own life, you know, once we get on a path with the Lord, victory is part of our identity.
Yes.
It's this weird thing. You know, the Bible says that we have been given the victory in all these things through our Lord Jesus Christ.
Right.
And because we have eternal life in Him, because we have everything we need in Him, and identification with the Godhead in Him. I mean, there's so much
right
there that what the enemy is left with is lies.
Right.
Let the enemy get us to believe his lies.
Right.
And we surrender
right
our victory.
Right.
Like, the more we buy in.
Right.
To the program,
yeah,
the more of the victory we surrender. And that's actually part of the process for a lot of folks that, you know, and I know that you have experienced degrees of this yourself, but it's like, you know, you come to Jesus and it's like, I'm a loser.
Yeah.
I am a failure. I'm trash because I just can't perform well. I'm not good enough. Things aren't working right.
Mm-hmm.
And the programs are still in place
right
at salvation. It's like, yeah, you come to Jesus, He saves our soul, He
right
redeems us, we're part of the family of God by identity, and then there's this journey of healing where all of these programs are still in place, and it's a journey of one program getting dismantled
yes
after another.
Yes.
The victory in our identity in that becomes more and more clear.
Right.
For those that don't take the journey.
Right.
Christianity never feels like victory.
Right. It's true. It's true. It just seems one big fat abysmal failure and ball of pain and loneliness.
Wow.
Frustration.
Ugh.
But the thing is, once you, like, start getting the victories, once the programming starts becoming dismantled, like, I was talking to my friend yesterday about one of the programs that I remembered that you dismantled. It was amazing. But I remember in the program, like, it was, I saw, like, just this big, giant field. And it looked like there had been hay, you know, they had, and there was just stubble everywhere and dirt. And in this program, and this was like what my life was like and had been like, that I, in this program, I could run as hard as I could and as fast as I could to get to the edge of the field. And I never could get to the edge of the field. Never. It was like a never ending. It was like it looked like it was right there, but then when you got there, it was still that far away. And that was honestly like a huge thing that was dismantled, but that was a perfect picture. picture of what my life, my whole life, has felt like. That I would try and try and try my hardest, and blood, sweat, and tears, and it felt like I was always a failure. Mm. I couldn't do things right. Mm. I, you know, left home at 14. I was on the streets. I was dealing drugs, like a little bit later, but I was doing drugs. I was gang raped. I was picking through trash cans, you know, and trash things to get food, and have spent more than 3.5 years of my life that I remember so far in rehabs and mental institutions, and people thinking I'm crazy, and trying so hard, and people saying, why can't you? Why can't you do this? Why can you not? Why can't you do this? And I'm like, I don't know. Hmm. Like, I want to. I'm trying so hard, but it was just like that program that no matter how hard I try to be normal, to be, you know, awesome member of society, like, I had issues, and I'm like, I didn't even know what they all were. And I have to say, life is different now. It was so cool. One day, as I was waking up, the Lord was speaking to me, and he was talking about going to school and showing me, like, these visions of, like, his plans for me. And what was so cool, it was like a huge quantum shift, kind of, I guess you could describe it, because it was that day, and it wasn't that long ago, that he was showing me these things. He has his plans for me. You know, he says, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. But he was showing me my personal plans that he had, like his plans for me that are different, of course, than everybody else's. Like, he has a plan for each person, but he was showing me things in before in my life. He was like, I couldn't do that. Like, but this time there was this shift where I was like, yes, I think I can. And I'm like, why not me? Why not me be completely healed? Why not me be loved? Why not me be successful? Why not me, like, be able to make an impact on this world for good and bring healing, help bring hope, instead of, you know, how it used to be? And it was so weird. And I woke up that morning and everything had changed. You know, I had been making these tiny steps. It seemed tiny. Every step is huge, right? But there just seemed so many of them. And I wake up this day and everything had changed. And I was like, yeah, why not me be happy, joyful, healed, reveling in the love of my Father, actually starting to be able to connect to people and have relationships where I had not been able to because of attachment, you know, issues. And yeah, that was amazing. And so, and I know I'm not the only one that God wants to do this for. So,
wow. So, in review, this guy, Hans, was a government scientist that was employed by the United States, but was a German. I'm making a leap here. I don't know this for a fact, but it is possible that he may have been brought over.
Yeah, he was.
After Project paperclip went into effect. And
Oh no, he never seemed to age.
Now isn't that something?
Yeah, I don't know why. That came to me, but he, all the years, like I was a child to an adult, he never aged.
Never aged. Now, as we get deeper into your story, we're going to get into cloning.
Mm.
We'll get into the underwater kingdom.
Right.
The merfolk.
Yep.
Antarctica. Alien groups.
Yep.
The mafia.
Yep.
Drugs. But not today.
Not today. There's a lot more.
Oh, my gosh. Friends, let me tell you something about Shuri. Shuri is here talking to me because Jesus Christ has changed her life.
Yep.
She's doing this for Jesus. And, you know, for those of you that may have gotten to this point in this podcast and you're still offended at the detail and the graphic nature of the memories that she has shared, I want to explain something to you. One of the reasons why I do this podcast and why we do go there and we don't gloss over the gory details all the time. Now, sometimes we're on more surface and it just depends on the guests and so on and so forth. But for every story that is shared, this is validation for someone else out there listening. And that's the short-sightedness of self-preservation. It's like, oh, I heard something I didn't want to hear the way I heard it. I'm offended. Well, yeah, that may be how you feel in this moment. But for that person that is getting validated for the first time and given the strength and the audacity, the courage to explore what God is bringing to the surface in their lives, it is life.
Yes.
It is life. All the years that I've been doing this, Shuri, it is amazing to me the amount of testimonies I get because of the details.
Right.
Almost the details that didn't seem to matter or could have been left out even. It's like, well, that wasn't the main point of the story, but it was just... And yet that's the key.
Right.
This whole podcast is a tool of deliverance. It really is. Mm-hmm. This is what God has used in a lot of cases to wake people up from their own programming. Break the matrix.
Yes.
Bring courage. Bring confidence. This is something the Lord wants to deal with.
Right.
So I want to say thank you, Shuri, for being part of God's solution to the problem.
Well, thank you for not giving up on me. Dan has been asking me to do this for a while, and I didn't want anybody to look at me. So I'm doing this for you.
We will be back in the future. There is more to come from Shuri. But until next time, friends, God bless and Godspeed.
You've been listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. Visit me at danduvall.com, where you will discover merch, books, and the opportunity to engage in our private social network. Join the tribe by subscribing to our email list and supporting this podcast.
The holidays mean more travel, more shopping, more time online, and more personal info in more places that could expose you more to identity theft. But LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second. If your identity is stolen, our U.S.-based restoration specialists will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Don't face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or financial losses alone. Get more holiday fun and less holiday worry with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code NEWS. Visit LifeLock.com. Terms apply.